not obligated to pass them along. Last week, a state district judge in Santa Fe disagreed and ordered the documents to be made available to the state auditor's office today. Getting underway today in an Albuquerque federal court is jury selection in the murder trial of an Arizona prison escapee charged with killing an Oklahoma couple as they traveled across New Mexico in August of 2010. John McCluskey is facing a possible death penalty if convicted of the murders of Linda and Gary Haas, whose bodies were found in a burned-out trailer near Santa Rosa. Before escaping jail, McCluskey was serving 15 years for attempted second-degree murder and other crimes. Former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson and actor, director, and conservationist Robert Redford have today announced they're joining the fight to stop horse slaughterhouses from reopening in the United States. The two have formed the Foundation to Protect New Mexico Wildlife and have joined in a lawsuit by animal protection organizations and others to block the USDA's recent greenlighting of Roswell's Valley Meat Company's otherwise imminent opening of an equine slaughterhouse. An emergency injunction is sought as the suit contends the USDA failed to perform required environmental reviews. Cleanup efforts are expected at Santa Clara Pueblo today after heavy weekend rains dropped more than 2 inches of rain over a short period of time. That caused a canyon channel to fill with some 9 feet of water. Though no properties were damaged, debris must be cleared before the next onslaught of monsoonal rains. Santa Clara remains at high risk for flash flooding as part of the after effects of the nearby 2011 Las Conchas fire. Fire-hardened soils there cannot absorb moisture, thus sending it all downhill toward the Pueblo. Aerial rehabilitation of the Tres Lagunas fire burn scar continues today with planes dropping seeds for various grasses over burned acreage. The Santa Fe National Forest says the seeds should sprout within a week. That, they say, will allow the area to act as a nursery that will stimulate indigenous forest regrowth. Such aerial operations are highly targeted and only conducted during morning hours before afternoon storms erupt. The Tres Lagunas fire burned more than 10,000 acres near Pecos after being started at the end of May by a downed electrical line. Santa Fe's annual Spanish Market, one of our city's summertime hallmarks, takes place at the end of this week. This year is the 62nd annual edition of the event, with hundreds of artists presenting their wares on the plaza Saturday and Sunday, July 27th and 28th. It's the oldest and largest juried Spanish market in the U.S., and attracts over 70,000 visitors and collectors from around the world. A huge crowd of Santa Feans took in the public opening Sunday of the new botanical gardens at Museum Hill. Two more phases are to be constructed next year for a total of 12 acres reflecting different aspects of the northern New Mexico landscape. Designed by landscape architect W. Gary Smith, the gardens integrate both natural and man-made settings to display garden design, horticultural practice, and architecture. And weather for Santa Fe. Partly sunny skies today and Tuesday with highs near 85. There's a 30% chance for isolated afternoon and evening thundershowers both days. Where storms do occur, rain could be heavy at times, due to the slow motion of the systems. More vigorous monsoonal rains are possible again Thursday and this coming weekend. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 82 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
On Wednesday, July 24th, several community leaders and residents will be attending a meeting in Santa Fe to discuss the effects of climate change on our state. Laura E. Sanchez is the CEO of the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, who is helping to host the event. Laura, let's begin by explaining, first of all, what is the Green Chamber?
The New Mexico Green Chamber is it's a chamber of commerce, so much like the traditional chambers that have been around for a long time. But our chamber is made up of about 1,100 small businesses statewide. We also have quite a few renewable energy and energy efficiency companies. And in general, our members basically support the triple bottom line, which means that they incorporate people, planet, and profit into their day-to-day when it comes to running their business. So it isn't just about profit as the bottom line. It's the triple bottom line.
And tell us about the event on Wednesday.
This is part of a national tour that's going on and coming to Santa Fe on Wednesday. And it's basically an effort to try to talk to people about climate change. And here in New Mexico, we're also going to be talking about the wildfires and the drought as impacts of climate change. The event will be held at the Santa Fe City Hall Chambers at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, the 24th. And we'll have Mayor Koss, Santa Fe Fire Department, local business owners who will be represented, and also the EPA regional administrator for this region, Ron Curry, who is one of our own here in New Mexico.
What do you hope the outcome of this event will be?
Well, the main purpose is really to try to get more people interested in doing something about climate change. This is part of the president's effort to try to address climate change as basically a common sense approach, which is to try to limit emissions that come from power plants. Power plants are one of the biggest emitters of carbon pollution, and that's really contributed to global warming and contributes to a lot of the, which in turn contributes to some of the major climate disruption that we've seen around the country recently and around the world. And so we're trying to get people to basically take a pledge to stand up for climate change and address some of these issues by supporting the president's initiative.
In New Mexico, we seem to have to deal with drought, which leads to forest fires, which further changes the climate. It seems like a vicious cycle here.
Absolutely, it really is. And that's one of the things, one of the reasons really that we have the Santa Fe Fire Department there is to discuss the impacts of the wildfires that we've seen recently. And it is really a vicious cycle, as you put it, because we're talking about drought conditions that have been occurring in our state over multiple years. And so we have really a tinderbox out there right now so that when wildfires occur, they spread more rapidly, they cause damage. And then we have another effect, which is when we have rains like we've had recently, we often have floods that come from that because of the fact that a lot of the countryside, the forest areas have been burned. So then you have additional impacts from that. And all of that in turn create a huge, basically a financial impact to cities and towns who are trying to deal with this, but also to businesses potentially because of the lost revenue from tourism and just the economic impact of that.
What can we as residents do to curb the impact of global warming?
There's certainly a number of things we could do. I mean, we need to try to really hold all of our businesses accountable, I think, to try to be more sustainable in our business practices. A lot of our members are small businesses, so they try to incorporate energy efficiency into their practice. They try to be responsible citizens, and I think we all can do our part to do that. But in addition, we need to try to come up with solutions to limit carbon pollution. And one of the ways the president is doing that is by working with EPA to limit those carbon emissions from power plants. Here in New Mexico, the Four Corners area, in particular, Farmington has one of the highest carbon pollution concentrations in the country. And so it actually is similar in some ways to the Los Angeles area in terms of the type of regional haze that we see because of those power plants. And that then in turn causes health effects. There's a lot of children with asthma, which then turns into costs through healthcare costs to a lot of those children. So I think as individuals, we can take a stand and support this effort and try to just educate our citizens here in New Mexico more about the type of impact we're going to see.
And is there a website or phone number people can use to get more information about Wednesday's event?
People can come to our website, actually, for the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, and that's at nmgreenchamber.com. We'll have information posted there that folks can visit and find out about. And if you have questions, you can also give us a call. Our office line is 505-244-3700. Again, that's 505-244-3700, and that's for the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce.
Laura Sanchez from the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from the Santa Fe Farmers Market, providing fresh, locally grown food to our community. The Farmers Market is now open every Saturday and Tuesday from 7 a.m. to noon in the rail yard. The Southside Market takes place on Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 6 at the Santa Fe Place Mall parking lot, Zafferano entrance. On Sundays from 10 to 4, the market hosts the Rail Yard Artisans Market, featuring fine arts and crafts, food, music, and more. To learn more, visit SantaFeFarmersMarket.com.
16 minutes past the hour as At Noon on KSFR continues. Here now in the middle of monsoon season, New Mexicans need to be wary of lightning. Every year, some 40 to 50 Americans are killed by the phenomenon, and New Mexico is among the states with the highest number of lightning strikes. What can you do to stay safe during an electrical storm? Chuck Jones is with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque, and he joins us now. Chuck, now we're all familiar with lightning, but you, speaking as a weather specialist, tell us what causes it.
Actually, lightning is caused by an extreme buildup of ice particles well up inside of a cloud, and that actually produces the lightning. And so you need clouds that go up very high in the atmosphere in the order of 40 or 50,000 feet in order to get that amount of ice to build up. And so we're talking about pretty big storms whenever we get the lightning and the thunder associated with it, of course. And so this happens quite a bit during the summer when the air is very warm and we get a lot of lift in the atmosphere. And that air rises, and as it goes up, it finally cools and drops below freezing. Still keeps going up because of strong updrafts, and eventually we end up seeing the lightning.
Are there different kinds of lightning?
Well, there is. There's cloud-to-ground lightning. Of course, that's the most dangerous, where it materializes in the cloud and comes down to the ground. And actually, there's what's called a leader or a feeder band that forms near the ground, and the lightning kind of meets in the middle. There's also cloud-to-cloud lightning and cloud-to-air lightning, which, of course, is not a big of a concern for people on the ground. Might be more of a problem for aircraft.
What are some of the things people should do to avoid being struck?
Well, you don't want to be outside. You want to go inside a house, a large shelter, or actually a good thing is an all-metal vehicle, i.e. your car. If the lightning were to strike the car, the lightning would go all around the metal, and chances are you would be safe inside. Remain clear of any tall or isolated trees or telephone poles. Stay away from wire fences or clotheslines or metal pipes. If you are outside, you want to, and away from a shelter, you need a place of safety, you got to find one. But if you can't, just stay away from tall objects and avoid being near anything that's metal.
We've always heard that it's a good idea to get in a car as the tires act as insulation. Is that true?
It's really more the metal that's around you that absorbs the lightning. It's not so much the rubber tires. It's not you wearing tennis shoes that have a lot of rubber in it. It's kind of a fallacy that people think help you. It's the metal that really saves you.
Anything you shouldn't do?
You do not want to lie flat on the ground. Lightning, if it strikes the ground, does travel through along and just under the ground, and you will feel that lightning if you're lying flat. You really want to have as little contact with the ground as possible. So the general theory has been that you crouch down kind of low on your tiptoes and just make yourself as small as possible with as little of surface of you on the surface of the ground as possible. You don't want to be outside. That's the worst place you can be, number one. And really, you need to wait 30 minutes after you hear that last rumble of thunder before you go outside. Lightning can travel 10, 15 miles or more. So it might be sunny outside and the thunderstorm has just passed, but that lightning can travel a long way and you can still be hit by lightning even long after the rain has ended and the sun's come out.
And any estimate on how long this particular monsoon season should last?
Well, typically it goes well into the month of September, and I see no reason why that won't happen. We're certainly off to a good start. Places around Santa Fe this month have already had over 4 inches of rain. Now, the airport's been far below that, but, of course, that's quite a ways from the city. And there's been 2, 3, 4-plus inches of rain in town so far this month. We're off to a great start, and let's just hope it continues through most of September.
Anything else you'd like us to know?
The air near a lightning strike is heated to 50,000 degrees Fahrenheit. That is hotter than the surface of the sun. So that's why you really don't want to mess around with lightning. The average flash could light a 100-watt light bulb for about 3 months. Lightning occurs, obviously, with every single thunderstorm.
Chuck Jones with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque. Many thanks for joining us here at noon. 21 minutes past the hour. Current downtown Santa Fe temperature at 83 degrees. High today expected of 85. At noon continues. The Santa Fe Art Institute has a program that allows artists of all types from around the world to come and work at the Institute. KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard joins us now and files this report.
The Santa Fe Art Institute regularly hosts international residency programs where artists of all type from around the world can come to Santa Fe to work on their art. Katie Avery is director of the program at the Institute.
Well, we host an international residency program that brings in around 70 artists and writers from around the world for a 1 to 3 month residency, and it gives them time and space to focus in at any point in their creative practice. The Santa Fe Art Institute is just kind of one facility in which we have rooms that the artists live in, studio space, and then kind of public spaces.
A wide variety of artists attend the residencies.
It really ranges from painters to fiction writers, musicians, choreographers, sculptors, filmmakers. We accept any medium, and we really do see a host of various mediums and people from all parts of the world that come.
On Thursday, July 25th, the public will have a unique behind-the-scenes look at the artist process.
Our open studios and readings are held every Thursday of every month of the year, except for January, which is kind of our off month where we kind of barrel down for our programming for the upcoming year. And then in November and December, they're held on the third Thursday. This month, it's going to be on July 25th at 6 p.m., and they're always a free event. It is the opportunity for our artists to share their work with the public here in Santa Fe. And so they get a short amount of time to give a presentation, and then they open their studios for the public to visit them.
Contact the Santa Fe Art Institute for more information on the open events.
Yeah, sure. Our phone number is 505-424-5050. And you can learn more on our website at www.sfai.org. You don't need a reservation. You just need to show up at 6 p.m. and it's held in our lounge area. We're located at 1600 St. Michael's Drive, and we sit at the back end of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design campus. And again, we're contained with our, you know, within our own facility. We're a local nonprofit.
Katie Avery of the Santa Fe Art Institute.
Really, I mean, the open studio events are really fun. It kind of gives a glimpse into the artists and writers' creative practices, and usually when someone comes for a residency, it really opens up their creative practice for creative risk taking, and they get to try new things, they get to open up old boxes of ideas that they may have had. So it's really interesting.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Can the devil really make you do it? Demon Extraordinaire Screwtape reveals the art of temptation in FPA's production of The Screwtape Letters at the Lenzic August 2nd and 3rd. The Wall Street Journal raves C.S. Lewis's The Screwtape Letters is one hell of a good show. For tickets, call 505-988-1234 or visit screwtapeonstage.com. Don't miss C.S. Lewis's The Screwtape Letters live on stage at the Lenzic August 2nd and 3rd. A message from the Nonprofit Fellowship for the Performing Arts.
25 minutes past the hour. Sunday's public opening of the new botanical gardens at Museum Hill was a big success, with well over 1,000 Santa Feans eager to take a look. What opened yesterday is just a first phase, with two more to follow next year. When completed, 12 acres will reflect different aspects of the landscape of northern New Mexico. The setting features both natural and man-made environments that speak to garden design and architecture, as well as various horticultural practices. KSFR News reporter Marion Cox was among those getting a first-hand look at the project early Sunday morning, and she filed this report.
It's a gorgeous Sunday morning, the 21st of July. I'm talking with Linda Milbourne, managing director of the brand new Santa Fe Botanical Garden. Linda, tell us what you expect today. Today's a free day for people who aren't members.
It is. Well, you know, our grand opening started Friday night and Saturday. We've had two fantastic days, And it is a thrill to see how many people are here this morning on a beautiful Sunday morning.
So tell me, why is having a botanical garden in Santa Fe, after hundreds of years of history here, so important?
It's really important that people understand the importance of plants in our lives, trees in our lives. We can't disconnect from nature. And if this is a way that we can bring people into a garden, teach people about how to grow things, the beauty of, and not be despairing of the fact that it's, maybe we're in a drought, maybe we're not getting enough rainfall. There's many things we can do to make sure that we have plants in our lives.
So you brought the issue of drought up. Those of us that live in Santa Fe have been living with it a couple of years now. Many of us get out in the spring and we're disappointed to see what kinds of losses we've incurred over the winter. You've got this gorgeous, brand new planted botanical garden. How are you keeping plants alive? And talk a little bit more to our listeners about why they shouldn't despair when some of their favorite or old plants do die.
Plants are living things. You know, and there will be plants that don't survive an extreme winter or, you know, an extra dry summer. But what we really want to tell people is we may see that as things evolve, that certain things don't grow here as well, but new things will. There's a display in this garden that shows what the science community believes will happen to climate zones, that things will gradually sort of creep north. There may be trees and plants that have grown here historically that may not do well in the future, but things that have grown, that have been not hardy enough to grow here, that grow southern in the southern part of the state, will do fine.
So tell us what you're expecting today. Today is, in fact, the free day. Yeah. It's 9:05. We're just the beginning of the day. What do you expect today?
Thrilled. Look at how many people are here. I hope that we have a lot of people out to enjoy it and know that this is here for them. We're going to have programming all year round and, you know, on all kinds of topics, not just gardening, but, you know, all sorts of things. And we just want people to recognize that this is for them. And we hope that they make it a part of their lives.
So it's free today. It's not free always. This is a one-off day free. Talk to us about membership and talk to us about how much it costs if you just want to come occasionally.
Okay. If you're not a member, admission normally is $5. If you're a member, you can come as many times as you want. There's never going to be a charge. There's a lot of benefits to being a member, and memberships start as low as $35. And that means you get, you know, discounts on a lot of programs, a lot of things free, so you get a lot for your money. Also, if you're a member of this garden and you do a fair amount of traveling, nationally, the botanical gardens have a reciprocal admission program. You can go to Denver, you can go to Phoenix, you can go to gardens in other cities free. So not just here.
Linda Milbourne, Managing Director of the Santa Fe, newly opened Santa Fe Botanical Garden. Thank you for speaking with KSFR today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm now speaking with Robin Jones, Executive Director of Cornerstone Community Partnerships. And I'm looking at this huge sign that says play with mud. Mud? We don't have mud in New Mexico, do we?
We have mud every time it rains. We have mud covering thousands and thousands of houses and churches and structures in New Mexico. This is adobe.
What is the play with mud all about here at the Botanic Garden today? What are you trying to do and who can participate?
Well, I'll start right off with everybody can participate. No age limit, no height limit. You can get as dirty as you want, and we encourage that. We're here to get the next generation involved with adobe preservation, but we're doing it through play with mud.
And what is a mud ball, and how does that relate to the botanic garden?
Well, we're doing seed mud balls today. We've got a special mixture of potting soil, sand, water, and a little bit of clay. We get it the right consistency, put seeds in it, roll it around, and then kids can take their own seed balls home and either plant them or throw them into the air and see where they fall and then go back and check them in the spring.
Wherever it lands, it has a pretty good chance of surviving?
As long as your dog does not learn to fetch and follows the ball and bring it back to you. And in that case, he's going to have a really muddy smile. This is just a one-time deal, and we'll certainly be working with the education crew here because this is such a great partnering opportunity. And if they want an adobe structure here, or if they want to do more with seed balls, we are always happy to partner with the Santa Fe Botanical Gardens. We're so delighted to be here today.
Well, Robin, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm speaking with Cornerstone Community Partnerships. Have a fun day.
We are already filled to our elbows with mud.
That report by KSFR's Marion Cox. 12:31 here in the KSFR newsroom. As we are at the bottom of the hour, let's take the opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I don't believe what just happened. Well, I do, but I don't, even though it happened. Have you ever had a cat stand or sit by its empty food bowl and imploringly look at you with disdain in its eyes, or sends forth a pathetic yet somehow commanding meow, asking why you're letting it starve to death? Or maybe you have a dog that does the canine equivalent, standing by its empty food bowl and barking or piercing your soul with soulful eyes that implore your kindness, hopefully accompanied with food. So there I was sitting in my living room, about to be dark and stormy early night, and I didn't want to go outside to fill the two tube bird feeders that were empty. I looked outside and there were two finches sitting on one empty bird feeder. And somehow, they made themselves look like it was 20 below zero, so notwithstanding possible lightning, I went out and filled the bird feeders. I guess I'm just a bird brain. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Greenfire Times, a new monthly publication focusing on all things green, including health, healing, organic foods, nutrition, permaculture, sustainability, green-collar jobs, and renewable energy. Greenfire Times is distributed at newsstands from Albuquerque to Taos. More information and an online edition can be found at greenfiretimes.com.
KSFR often explores education efforts here in New Mexico. Our attention was drawn recently to a nearby institution that's part of an international program called United World College. United World College USA is located in the historic Montezuma Castle near Las Vegas, New Mexico. The school uses the word college in the British sense of sixth form college, the final 2 years of secondary school. So UWCs are upper-level secondary schools. The local campus seeks to distinguish itself through its robust wilderness program and its relationship with the local community of Las Vegas, where students participate in an array of service projects. KSFR News reporter David King spoke with school representatives and files this report.
The United World College USA is one of 12 campuses located on five continents. A two-year residential school, the college serves students aged 16 to 19 who typically represent more than 70 different countries. They participate in a unique program that combines academic challenge with an experiential, hands-on approach to learning. Lisa Darling, president of the United World College USA for the past 8 years, talked about what attracted her to the organization.
The United World College mission and students, Northern New Mexico didn't hurt either because it's such a beautiful place to live. I stumbled, frankly, on United World College. We run teacher training workshops in the summer, and I came for one and was just so compelled by the students who stay and work in the summer program. I became quite taken with United World College and began trying to learn about it, and then poof, an opening happened, and I applied, and I've been lucky enough to be here these 8 years. I've been in secondary schools. I spent most of my career in Quaker schools, actually primary and secondary.
Lisa described the mission of the United World College, its size, and a brief history.
We have a blissfully short mission statement, and we can all recite it. It says, UWC uses education as a force to unite people, nations, and cultures for peace and a sustainable future. There are a total of 12 United World Colleges. We're governed and overseen by our international office in London. United World Colleges come in all sizes, shapes, and forms, but the classic model is the one that we are, 200 students for 2 years, small enough for everyone to know everyone. Last I looked, 87 full-time staff members. The campus is about 125 acres. about a $10 million operating budget. Well, an entering class is roughly 100 students, and they stay with us for 2 years. Our college is 30 years old. We were founded in 1982. The United World College movement was founded in 1962.
Lisa then went on to touch on how the college interacts with its New Mexico neighbors.
The people of New Mexico have been extraordinary in reaching out to and including and engaging our students. The good folks in the Park Service connect and work with us well and make possible what we do. Las Vegas itself, we are connected with so many community agencies, and they give our students the opportunities to learn real skills of leadership and impact that they then take back to towns, villages, and cities all over the world.
Ms. Darling described the International Baccalaureate, which is the qualification bestowed by the college.
The students take a course in their first language, and we have some 50 languages taught here. And they take a second language, something in the social sciences, laboratory sciences, mathematics, and then a sixth course that can be in any of those areas or in the arts. We teach visual arts, music, theater, and dance here. Yeah. The International Baccalaureate really is the gold standard of the high school diploma worldwide. It's the only diploma recognized by countries, ministries of education, and universities all over the world.
Lisa next described how the graduates from the United World College feel about their experience.
When we last surveyed our graduates, 91% of them said this was the transformational experience of their lives. So we know that our students have a phenomenal college placement results, and then they go on and do great things. They're members of parliament around the world. The former CEO of Nokia was a United World College graduate.
At this point, Lisa described an experience that beautifully illustrated the teaching style at the college.
I once watched one of our mathematics teachers teach a fairly simple lesson, but at one point a student raised his hand and asked, I feel like I've seen that before, but at my school at home the notation was different. It was this. Am I remembering incorrectly? And the teacher said, no, really important that we stop and talk about this. All right, if you were raised in a Commonwealth country, you are going to have seen this mathematical equation through this kind of lens with this kind of notation. If you grew up in this part of the world, it's phrased this way and here's why. It was like a history of the world through a math equation. I just want folks to feel proud and to know that there's something very worthy of their support.
I'm David King for KSFR in Santa Fe.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Charles Maynard, Marion Cox, and David King. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.